May it please the court, opposing counsel, first of all, I want to thank y'all for inviting me to come to New Orleans to give this oral argument. As an attorney, been practicing over 30 years, never had a constitutional issue before. That constitutional issue is here today, and what we're talking about is garbage. Pretty nasty topic for such a distinguished panel, but that's what we're talking about here today.
Not your argument.
That's for the court's opinion.
Okay.
I will leave that to your discretion. Right. The first thing I want to point out is this was a case that was brought over an ordinance that was enacted by the city of San Antonio that required waste haulers to pay a flat permit fee of $2,250 a year annually per vehicle. Per vehicle. This is not, as Judge Beery misinterpreted in his motion in a summary judgment, a flow control ordinance. A flow control ordinance was first dealt with by the Carbone Court, and a flow control ordinance mandates that trash or refuse from a city community is delivered specifically to one landfill that is publicly owned. The Carbone case dealt with a privately owned landfill, and they held that as a violation of the Constitution.
Is the heart of your argument, you know, a pecuniary one? I know the constitutional argument, I'm not trying to minimize that.
Yes, sir.
But I mean, at bottom, is because as I understand, I mean, over time, you know, this practice vis-a-vis the hauling, the dumping, et cetera, I mean, in some form or another has been there. So, I mean, at the heart of it, is it the cumulative dollar amount that your client or similarly situated would have to pay, or is it not the dollars as much as the principle, shall we say, of having this as opposed to something else?
If I could select another word, I would select the word methodology.
Okay.
It's the methodology that this money is collected in. In a flow control ordinance, the methodology that is used in Carbone was a tipping fee. In United Waste Haulers, the case that Judge Beery relied upon, it was a tipping fee, not a permit fee. A tipping fee is paid to the landfill. The permit fee is paid to the city. The tipping fee goes to reimburse those people who created the landfill, to give them their money back, some way to provide waste services for a community that would otherwise be without one.
So if the fee is collected for the purpose of remunerating some benefit, cost, et cetera, that would be okay. But if it's collected just so that it goes in the coffers, it is otherwise available to the municipality to use general revenue or something totally unrelated, part of the concern about the methodology.
That is part of the concern, Justice. But one of the things that I'd like to point out is that we do not have in the city of San Antonio a flow control ordinance. It does not mandate that waste is delivered to one of three landfills in San Antonio, two of which are privately owned, one of which is owned by the city, but it's a transfer station, and then there are surrounding landfills outside of the community of San Antonio. Now, if this was based upon a volume or usage, that's what the United Waste Haulers case was based upon, volume and usage. The tipping fee is based on volume and usage. So one person that comes in and uses it one time isn't disproportionately charged a permit fee. In the United Haulers case, the differences are that it's a public benefit corporation that operates a landfill. In San Antonio, we have two independent companies that operate the landfills. This is not a city that's operating the landfills. These are private corporations.
Now, let me just ask you, you're making a dormant commerce clause violation. That's your argument, right?
That is the second of our arguments under the case. The first argument is that the court incorrectly applied a flow control ordinance criteria to a non-flow control ordinance.
Okay. Does that figure into your dormant commerce clause violation?
It does, because that is the way that the court tried to get around the dormant commerce clause. Is they said, well, it's a flow control ordinance. And if we got a flow control ordinance, we can charge a fee. But the fee in the flow control ordinance is not paid to the city. It's paid to the operator of the landfill. in the United Waste Haulers case. It was a public benefit corporation. And so what we have is...
May I ask you, does any of this money go to the privately owned...
No, ma'am, it does not.
So where do they get their money?
They charge a tipping fee based on volume and usage at the facility.
So if you have a truck and you want to dump garbage at a private facility, you have to pay this amount to San Antonio you're complaining about, plus you have to pay a tipping fee when you get to the spot, dump,
and
whatever?
Even if the landfill is located, we have surrounding counties in San Antonio, and even if the landfill is located in a surrounding county, if you pick up trash in San Antonio, you got to pay that permit fee. Okay? And so that's the big difference.
So it's a pickup fee. So when you take, is there any place you can take it where you don't have to pay a tipping fee?
No, no. And I say tipping fee loosely. It's a charge that you pay for depositing your waste.
Even the city-owned, county-owned dump spot, you have to pay another fee?
In the city-owned, it's a transfer station. It's basically used by their vehicles to drop their trash off from their collection procedures.
So you wouldn't dump that?
So no one dumps there, except for the individuals that can dump on the weekends. You can go out and take your litter and stuff of that nature. But the first step in the analysis of the Dormant Commerce Clause is it must regulate even-handedly with only incidental effects on interstate commerce or discriminates against interstate commerce. And it's hard to imagine. We're in 2013. It's hard to imagine how interstate commerce does not impact. Let me give you an example. The two largest waste haulers in the city of San Antonio own the two landfills. From personal knowledge, one of those purchased a business that I represented. And that business was located outside of San Antonio.
Outside of Texas or just outside of San Antonio?
Outside, well, the Waste Management and BFI are nationwide companies.
Oh, yeah.
They made a decision to come to the San Antonio market. And so they bought a company that existed there so they could take those contracts and use them to get into that San Antonio market. Under this ruling, that's not possible. Because they'll look at it and they'll say, we got to pay $22.50 a truck. How long are we going to have to lose money before we want to do business in San Antonio? And Justice Stevens, in the Cardone case, basically said that while the immediate effect of the ordinance is to direct the local transport of solid waste to a designated site, its economic effects are interstate in reach. And that's what we have. We're discouraging people coming into San Antonio to deal in refuge because of this. One of my clients is not in San Antonio, despite the allegations in the appellee's brief. They are from Seguin, Texas. There is a landfill in Seguin, Texas, but if they want contracts in San Antonio, the closer landfills are those that are in San Antonio. Reduces costs, reduces everything. But if they're having to pay $22.50 per truck, that's going to stymie a lot of businesses from trying to get in there. Not only large businesses that are nationwide, but smaller businesses, the foundation of what we're based upon.
What time frame does that cover? What time frame? $2,250.
Annually per truck. For example, there's 300 trucks, or excuse me, it's 250 trucks that the city of San Antonio uses. They don't pay a penny for that. They don't pay a penny for that.
Could you relate this to that Pike test? In other words,
well,
as I understand it, the two questions under the Pike balancing test. One is this ordinance neutral as to in-state and out-of-state haulers, and that it is neutral?
Absolutely. We're not going to disagree about that.
Okay. Then you go to the second question, and that's whether the ordinance poses an indirect burden on interstate commerce that's clearly excessive in relation to local benefits. Now, you've given us a hypothesis of where it certainly could burden interstate commerce, but was that quantified in the record so that we can make a balancing on whether it's clearly excessive in relation to local benefits?
First of all, that was pointed out in the response to summary judgment and the motion for summary judgment that people coming in and out of this community were prohibited from doing it based upon, if you use the landfill 100 times per truck, what would run that? 250 a truck or 250 a haul? If you use it once, that's 2250. A business is not going to move into a situation like that or want to do business in that area. What we're doing is we're putting a boundary around the city of San Antonio saying if you want to haul waste, you got to pay for the right to do business. That's all it is.
And that burden is on local as well as out-of-state haulers?
As far as per truck it is, but as far as the burden for use, based on volume and use, what went through the Carbone opinion, what went through the Oregon Systems opinion, it's not. It prohibits or it prevents people or discourages people from wanting to be involved. The last point is this is a flat fee. This is a flat fee.
Let me get back to my question. Okay. Is there anything in the record that would quantify the extent of the burden on interstate haulers as opposed to local haulers so that we could make a judgment about whether where that burden is clearly excessive in relation to the local haulers? I mean, that's the test.
That's the test, but I point to the court what Carbone said. The ordinance thus deprives out-of-state businesses of access to a local market, and that's what we've got in all our response, is it's preventing. Now, do we have deposition testimony of some out-of-state company saying that they're going to want to come into San Antonio? No, so the record was not developed that way.
Okay.
But the economic effects.
Well, you're hypothesizing that it is, but we don't have any concrete evidence that that's so, do we?
But the Carbone opinion, or excuse me, the Schreiner opinion says that to determine the internal consistency of a statute, of an ordinance, as to the dormant commerce clause, it's a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical. And you've got to sit there and decide, is this preventing business in San Antonio in the garbage?
Well, why is it any different than what the local haulers have to pay? I don't see the disproportionateness.
It discourages out-of-town businesses from trying to come in and start in a regional nature. You start in a regional area, you move into a city. That's how businesses develop all over the country.
But again, you don't have any record evidence of anybody wanting to do that.
No, ma'am, we do not.
Okay.
We do not. The last thing I'll point out is about the flat fee. This is the flat fee. And the flat fee is unconstitutional based upon the Loewenberg case, which is a Texas Supreme Court case that was cited in there. And so in that nature, the court is, let me find the citation. It says, although the registration fee in the present case was intended to offset administrative costs of collecting fire safety information or commercial buildings and incorporating in a database used in fire prevention efforts, clearly regulatory efforts, the city acknowledges that the fee was also intended to raise revenue. That's what we have in this case. The testimony before the court is that there's a $3 million budget. 1.2 is sought to be raised by this. In the $3 million budget, they're providing garbage service. And so what they're trying to do is take the burden off the taxpayers from paying their proportionate share of that and imposing it upon the waste haulers.
Of course, the U.S. Supreme Court said the Michigan statute was okay in American Trucking v. Michigan. That was a flat tax.
Yes.
On everyone, all truckers who did intrastate hauling in Michigan.
Yes, sir.
Both intrastate and interstate.
Yes, sir. But Schreiner case is the controlling case in this situation because it discouraged interstate commerce. And as I had a constitutional law professor tell me 30-some years ago, there'll be a day and time when everything is interstate. We've got internet, we've got communications. Everything impacts on interstate. The Carbone case, every one of these cases that have dealt with this issue have said that the hauling of garbage is interstate commerce.
Well, it just seems like why would somebody from Louisiana want to go over to San Antonio and pick up the garbage or dump the garbage when there are other facilities much closer? I mean, the nature of garbage is you want to get rid of it quickly.
Yes, Your Honor, but you want to expand your business. You want to be the king of the hill. You want to be waste management. You want to be BFI. You want to be everybody. You want to have business in every place.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Neal. You've reserved the vote time. Here from the city, Ms. Stroh.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jackie Stroh, and I represent Appalee, the city of San Antonio. First of all, Your Honor, just briefly, I would like to refute the notion that Judge Berry, the district court below, treated this as a flow control ordinance. He did not. He simply relied on United Haulers, which has many important points for the court to consider. One of the points in United Haulers that is important for the court to consider and that Judge Berry considered important is the fact that the management of solid waste has typically and traditionally been a local government function, subject to regulation by that local government function. Another important aspect of the United Haulers case is that it applied the Pike balancing test, which Judge Davis referenced during opposing counsel's argument. The Pike balancing test, which looks at whether the regulation is even-handed, and there's no dispute in this case that it was not even-handed, and whether the burden, if any, that it imposes on interstate commerce is excessive in relation to the local benefits. Again, as Judge Davis noted, there's zero evidence in the record of any burden, much less an excessive burden, on interstate commerce in this case. So United Haulers is important, even though there's no flow control ordinance involved here, and the district court never held that there was a flow control ordinance involved here. One final aspect of the United Haulers case is that the court did indeed require evidence of a burden, an excessive burden, and not just supposition and hypotheticals, which is all that appellants have. With respect to the Shiner case, we have argued in our brief that the Shiner four-prong test is not appropriate for use by this court for a number of reasons, primarily because the Shiner four-prong test has been applied in cases where state taxation, as opposed to regulatory efforts, including regulatory fees, is at issue. In fact, in the Michigan Public Service case, which again was referenced during opposing counsel's argument, the court explained that the Shiner case had typically, in fact exclusively, been used in circumstances in which a state tax was at issue as opposed to a regulatory provision or regulatory fee, such as we have in this case. And in fact, in the V1 oil case and the interstate trucking case, which are also cited in our brief, a 10th Circuit case and a 6th Circuit case respectively, they made that very distinction. And they said that we have regulatory fees at issue here, not taxes. Therefore, we're going to use the Pike balancing test and not the Shiner four-prong test. With respect to the Shiner four-prong test, although opposing counsel says that he concedes two of the elements and really challenges only the remaining two, which is that the ordinance discriminates and that it doesn't fairly apportion, in truth, he simply relies on the fairly apportioned prong to argue that there's internal inconsistency in the ordinance in question. But again, referring back to the Michigan Public Service case, which is cited in our brief, the court said that the question for internal consistency, the internal consistency prong, rather, is not violated when someone may be subject to multiple taxation, as long as that multiple taxation is for the taxation of intrastate commercial activity. And in fact, in the Shiner case, and Justice Scalia noted this in his concurrence in the Michigan Public Service case, the Shiner case imposed an axle tax and a marker fee or marker tax for trucks that simply transversed the state on their way to another state and in fact conducted no intrastate commercial activity whatsoever. I would just like to briefly explain why the ordinance is a regulation as opposed to a tax. We do address this in our briefing. Not only, as I previously mentioned, does the ordinance address a subject of traditional police power, which is the management of solid waste, But it also, as the testimony in the record indicates, specifically there's affidavit and deposition testimony from Rose Ryan that indicates that the City of San Antonio's solid waste budget is not 3 million, but for some of the functions of the solid waste management program in San Antonio, the budget is 3 million. So it's 3 million at least. And that the permit fee was designed to raise somewhere between $900,000 and $1.2 million. The Loewenberg case, which was cited by opposing counsel, in which the Texas Supreme Court addressed whether the issue was, whether the fee imposed was regulatory in nature or whether it was an occupation tax, there the fee collected equaled the city's budget for the It was a fee assessed on commercial buildings for fire prevention services. And what the record showed is that the fee generated the revenue generated by the fee imposed in that case equaled the efforts aimed at fire prevention in general for all programs. Clearly, that's not the situation we have in this case. The revenue generated is being generous. Is a third of the City of San Antonio's budget with respect to all of solid waste.
You made a standing argument.
A standing argument, which is very important, and I'm glad you addressed it.
As I understand it, the Dormant Commerce Clause is designed to prohibit excessive burdens on interstate commerce. So your argument is that for this plaintiff to have standing, they had to show that they were engaged in interstate commerce.
That's exactly right, and there's zero showing on the record. Even if, as opposing counsel claims, one of the waste haulers is based in Seguin, clearly they're still in Texas, although I pulled the San Antonio information from their petition on file in the record. But in any event, even if they operate in different municipalities within the state of Texas, again, there's zero evidence in the record supporting that they engage in any interstate activity whatsoever. And as the court is familiar with the prudential standing requirements, one of them is that the party making a claim has to be within the zone of interests protected by the constitutional provision at issue. A company that does zero interstate business in interstate commerce is not within the zone of interests protected by the Dormant Commerce Clause. We did note in our brief that this court has held that prudential standing requirements can be waived when they're not raised below. But I would also note that this court has held, in fact, in a flow control ordinance case that involved fees paid to the dumping sites, that the issue can be addressed sua sponte, and there are decisions from other circuit courts holding that, in fact, the issue cannot be waived and must be addressed sua sponte if not raised by the parties in the case. I would also note that it's particularly appropriate here for the court to address the issue of prudential standing where there's a constitutional issue involved. In fact, the Dormant Commerce Clause was the issue in the Pine Belt case, which was decided by this court, and in which the court addressed the issue of both Article 3 and prudential standing sua sponte. And as the court knows, there are deeply rooted principles, as stated by the Supreme Court of the United States in the Elk Grove case, deeply rooted principles of avoiding constitutional questions when they can be avoided. We also raised an Article 3 standing point. Of course, that can never be waived and can be raised for the first time on appeal. I realize that opposing counsel, although they did not file a reply brief and did not respond to any of our standing challenges, so I don't actually know what they would say.
Well, they do have to pay a fee.
Do have to pay a fee, and I understand that, and I do acknowledge that. But the Article 3 standing requirement has three separate prongs. There has to be an injury, and that injury has to be redressed by the court's activity. Here, and I've got it quoted in my brief, and it's very short. We've got a reference to the record. The discussion is on page 42 of our brief. And in that record reference, the appellants really admit that a change in the structure or the methodology of the fee would actually increase their costs. So they're not having any injury remedied by any action that this court would take. In fact, they'd be subjected to more fees because they are the ones that they claim, they are the ones that use the landfills the most or that collect the most garbage within the city of limits of San Antonio. And I'm just going to read really briefly this quote. Now, it says,
if the fee is unconstitutional and a ruling would prevent the city from collecting it, why doesn't that redress the injury?
Well, it would prevent the city from collecting it, but and I understand I may be splitting hairs here, and I actually do think that the prudential standing argument is the stronger argument. But with respect to that prong, it would be a short-lived victory because nothing would prohibit the city of San Antonio from enacting another ordinance using a methodology that appellants approve and claim is unconstitutional, which would have the effect of actually increasing their fees. So it's technically not an injury that would be redressed by anything the court would do. And I would just quote really briefly, it says, the fee applies without regard to the usage of the landfills. This would benefit the local companies who use the landfill more often and burden the companies who use the landfill infrequently. So they're actually arguing that they're helped by this methodology, as odd as that may seem. And I do just want to mention briefly that the issue with respect to facial discrimination is undisputed. They haven't argued it. They don't argue it in their brief, and they couldn't because on its face, the ordinance does not discriminate between intrastate or interstate haulers. With respect to discrimination in effect, I would just point out to the court that the test for discrimination, it asks whether there is differential treatment of in-state and out-of-state economic interests that benefit the former and burden the latter. Again, I would note that even though opposing counsel claims that they challenge that element of the Shiner test, this discrimination in effect, they don't brief it. They brief only the internal inconsistency test. And in any event, there's absolutely no record evidence of any discrimination in effect against interstate haulers versus intrastate haulers. As the court has already noted, everyone who collects or disposes of waste within the city limits of San Antonio must pay this fee. And I would note that the V1 oil case and the interstate trucking case, again, the cases from the 10th Circuit and the Sixth Circuit, respectively, have addressed the very arguments that opposing counsel makes and rejected them. It says, for example, they say, ITA asserts that the per-mile cost of the fee is higher for towing companies based in Kentucky and Indiana than for those based in Ohio, but there is no defensible basis for this assertion. While the burden of the fee is indeed less as a percentage of revenue for those firms that do more business in Cincinnati, this has nothing to do with the towing company's home state. Anyone can cross state lines and collect or dispose of waste in San Antonio, and they would be subject to the same fee as a company operating, the appellants operating in the city of San Antonio.
So what's the status? The implementation has just been stayed pending this litigation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
I mean, they're actually collecting?
To be honest with you, it's not in the record, and I don't actually know, but there's nothing in the record to indicate that enforcement has been stayed.
Okay. When was it enacted?
It was enacted in, I do have that, it was June 29, 2006. There was a prior ordinance, but the amended ordinance, which is under challenge here, was enacted June 29, 2006.
So it's been, in theory or in reality, in operation for 6 years?
Right.
And presumably fees have been collected. Was there a stay was not sought?
They did seek a stay, and it was denied.
Denied, okay.
Yes. Okay. They sought a temporary injunction. Magistrate Promomo recommended against it, and Judge Beery adopted his recommendation.
Okay.
And I would just note one final point with respect to that, Your Honor, is that it has been a number of years, and the only people who've challenged it are people who are operating within the city of San Antonio. There's no national market for the collection or disposition of trash in the city of San Antonio. There's no dormant commerce clause violation, and Judge Beery ruled correctly in rejecting it. unless the court has any other questions, I think that concludes my argument. We would just ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. We have your argument. Mr. Neal, you have rebuttal.
First thing I want to address is the Goldberg versus Sweet case that talks about this internal consistency. And what Goldberg says is to be internally consistent, a tax must be structured so that if every state were to impose an identical tax, no multiple taxation would result. Thus, the internal consistency test focuses on the text of the challenge statute and hypothesizes a situation which other states have passed identical ordinances. That's the internal consistency test. You fail one of the four of Schreiner, you fail Schreiner. The injury, the court correctly pointed out, the injury is having to pay these. And by sidebar, they have been trying to collect these, and they have been issuing tickets. But so it has been, they have sought enforcement of the statute. I would point out also as to this argument that the city makes that their budget is $3 million and they're only asking for $1.2 million. I disagree with the characterization of those fees. That's a total budget. That includes buying trucks, picking up trash at residential areas. And so all of that is what the ESD, the Environmental Services Division of the City of San Antonio, does. That is where this money goes into the general budget. And it's going into a general budget. It's not just paying for enforcement of this statute. It is paying for the collection of trash from my neighborhood. When I put my trash out yesterday morning before I left to come to New Orleans, the city is coming to pick it up. I may get a reduced rate because all these other waste haulers are having to pay a permit fee. That's the problem with a flat tax.
Let me ask you, do you agree that your client does not engage in interstate commerce?
Well, did they ever leave the state? No. But are they engaged in interstate commerce by trying to buy and sell businesses? Yes, sir, they are.
But, I mean, they're garbage hauling businesses. They don't haul garbage across state lines.
Not at this time. Not at this time. But we're talking about an industry where that waste is hauled from across straight lines, or state lines, not straight lines, state lines, once it's at the landfill. Yes. There's different types of waste that are transported across the country. Environmentally sensitive waste is transferred all over.
But how, I mean, you can't assert the rights of somebody else. I mean, that's the prudential standing principle. So let me ask you my question first. If the object of the Dormant Commerce Clause is to prevent an out-of-state competitor from being abused by a local ordinance, and you're not an out-of-state competitor in this business, how are you within the zone being protected by the Dormant Commerce Clause?
We're protected by the Dormant Commerce Clause because every citizen in America should be protected by the Dormant Commerce Clause. That's the Constitution. The Constitution extends to everybody, not just people that are working in San Antonio, not just people that are working in New Orleans. So it affects everybody. Whether
the plaintiff who sues has to show that he's within that zone of interest. He can't assert somebody else's rights.
We are in that zone of interest in that we're having to pay that fee. And that fee is unconstitutional.
But it doesn't burden your interstate competition, as I understand it.
It does in our ability to sell to somebody else who wants to come in and buy it, just like happened, and it's Cibolo Waste, not Cibolo, but Cibolo Waste was purchased by Waste Management 20 years ago. And that's how they got into the business. So what the court's going to do is put up blinders and say, in this particular situation, we can't see where it impacts anybody else. And I don't believe that's what it's about. I think it's about whether or not we have a statute or an ordinance that violates the Dormant Commerce Clause. And so what I want to say about the methodology, that the argument we'd have to pay more under the methodology, no, we wouldn't. We'd have to pay based on volume and usage, not based on just owning a truck. So if there's no more questions, I'm finished. We ask the court to reverse the summary judgment, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Neal. Thank you, both counsel.